JFM's Weekend Breakfast with Alison Curtis
and Cadbury. There's a glass and a half in everyone, so share kindness.
Lucy Wolf has joined me in studio, sleep matters and sleep consultant. How are you?
I'm very good.
It's been a while since you've been here, actually.
It is. Yeah, that's right.
But I thought of you a couple of weeks ago when my daughter Joan came into the front of the house and the kids were all playing, and we've got a question in about this as well, out on the street. And I'm like, how am I going to get her to sleep when no one else is going to sleep? And I thought, I think Lucy's bedtime. Lucy came in on Weekend Breakfast and talked to us about it. Yeah. So the evenings are longer and certainly in the last 3 weeks, hotter. So what have been sort of, what would you advise families as top tips to kind of go, all right, during this period, hot weather, but also during the summer months, to kind of retain a routine?
I know. And I suppose really you know your own child best. Yeah. So I generally feel in the summer months, if you can, I'd be a little bit more relaxed about bedtimes.
Okay. She said it, folks.
I did. I would be relaxed. But at the same token, if you start to feel that your child's mood and behaviour is degrading, or their overnight sleep is degrading, then you maybe need to pull it back and maybe not do too many late nights in a row, and maybe litter in a few early nights versus the later onset of sleep.
Okay.
Because I suppose some children will tolerate it quite well and they'll go to bed late and maybe they'll even wake late. Mm-hmm. But a majority of children will go to bed late and still wake at their normal time, if not a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So again, they're getting a little bit sleep deprived. And I'm seeing this even with my own younger family, that they're starting to get a little bit ratty now because they're just not getting enough sleep.
It does affect.
It totally does. It kind of affects everything. Mm-hmm. So I'd just be pulling it back now, let's say personally myself, over a couple of nights this week.
Right.
But in general, let's say I do think that that dynamic between, let's say, your child is going to bed and the children outside are not. I do a lot of talking with children about, let's say, what happens in our house.
Okay.
Now again, that's not necessarily that helpful, but you can be explaining to them, well, look, in our house we do this because.
Yeah.
And some of the times, if you really feel it's a massive distraction, I sometimes would use white noise.
Okay.
Like on an app on your phone in the hallway.
Right.
It would just maybe act as a mask for the sound.
Yeah, because it is like her bedroom would be at the back of the house, but with the heat and everything, she's moving around a little bit.
Yeah.
And it definitely is harder, and she does hear them. And a woman, who was that sent that in? Sinead and Lusk is saying it as well, just literally that they won't go to sleep because they hear the kids outside. And they're like, well, they've gone to bed. Why do I have to?
I know.
Yeah.
And I suppose, again, just talking it through and then maybe looking, can you create some level of a sound barrier?
Okay.
And then maybe being a little bit relaxed yourself, if you feel a child can tolerate it in terms of that slightly later bedtime.
What about your sort of top tips in general for unwinding a young family at night to make sure that they do kind of hit a target of sleep?
Yeah, and I suppose I'd be a big advocate of doing a wind down 20 to 30 minutes before you anticipate your child should be aiming to be asleep.
Okay,
and I suppose I feel that a bedtime routine, there are some key points that I feel work very well.
Okay.
So the bedtime routine would happen in the bedroom that your child is going to sleep in.
Okay.
There's not a huge amount of merit in doing it downstairs, only to break the spell and bring them upstairs, or do it in your bedroom and then bring them into their bedroom.
Right.
I think it's a good idea for them to have positive associations with the place that they're going to sleep. And again, we try to use light and temperature to help direct us as we work towards going asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a bit hard at the moment because it's been uncharacteristically warm.
Yeah.
And again, it's brighter in the evening time. So again, I think blackout blinds are a really good idea.
So if people don't have them, they are affordable, aren't they?
I feel that they are. And I was just thinking of this coming up in the car this morning, that if we can't afford them, then I'd look at maybe some alternative ways in a short-term capacity. So maybe tinfoil. In the winter.
Blanket.
It's just something maybe to isolate the light, because unfortunately the light stimulates the waking part of the brain.
Of course.
And again, it kind of, if you've got children playing outside, the light is coming in, then
the
your
noise.
Child is going to find it really hard to achieve sleep.
Okay.
So we always want to use darkness to send the right message to the brain.
And what do you mean by temperature? Like a certain, because in colder rooms you do sleep better.
Absolutely.
In, right?
So we rely on the temperature, the body temperature and the room temperature to be low.
Right.
In order for sleep to be invited in with ease. And so obviously in this last month, the rooms are way too hot and your core body temperature is up.
Right.
So we might look at trying to bring it down. So obviously I would look to make the rooms cooler by maybe by day, making sure that the blinds are down early, the windows are open. I often use a fan with a frozen bottle of water in front of it.
That's the thing a lot of people are saying, and I was talking to a neighbour about that. She's like, the fan isn't doing anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, put a bowl of ice in front of it,
because otherwise it's just moving hot air around the room,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So again, it's like a DIY air conditioning system as per se.
Yeah.
And I would even maybe look at a cool bath or shower just to try and lower the the body temperature. Mm. And if you don't have time for that, even just running the wrists underneath.
That's very relaxing,
yeah,
actually.
And it'll just help to just lower the temperature. So again, we'll be trying to use those strategies at this time of year.
Okay. So Lucy, some questions that have come in, and they're still coming in. We'll try and get through as many as we can at 0874 100102. I had a six-year-old who's never slept really full nights in her own room. She always ends up with us at some point. Is there a way of breaking this cycle? Sorry, this was Sinead.
Yeah, there really is. And I suppose, you know, very often when your child is older, you feel this is just the way it is. Whereas I really feel in my practice, I work with children up to age six, and my book covers up to age six as well. I feel it's totally reversible.
Doable, yeah.
It does take a little bit longer in a lot of instances. And generally, we have to go through a whole cycle of learning.
Okay.
Because what's happened is that she has associated
sleep with,
part of her sleep with the parents' bedroom.
So now, what would be the first
step? Well, very often
do?
The association starts at bedtime, and it wouldn't be a bit unusual for someone who is doing some bed swapping overnight to maybe start off even with just their bedtime routine in the parents' bedroom, or maybe they're being accompanied to sleep at bedtime.
Okay.
And we would always try and maybe weaken that cycle a little bit.
Okay.
And again, with the older child, I feel you need a buy-in from them.
Okay.
So I feel we need like a marketing strategy, if that makes any sense.
And you'll get a better night's sleep.
Yeah, and I suppose I'm always talking about children, you know, as soon as they're verbal, to become invested in their sleep happiness.
Yeah.
That we don't look at sleep as being a punishment, that you get sent to your room.
It's a thing we need.
Yeah, and that it's just as important as eating healthy, getting outside and being, you know, you could use fresh air and exercise.
Yeah.
So again, I would really try and get a buy-in from this child. And then I suppose we do a sleep learning exercise, which means that you'd weaken any association at bedtime with the parent.
Okay.
And again, I'm a big advocate of bringing forward bedtime as we do learning.
Okay.
So even at age six, the majority of children would still need to be in bed asleep somewhere between 7 and 8.
Okay.
And often parents are shocked by that. They feel that their 6 or 7 year old maybe should have a much later bedtime. Mm. But someone who's not routinely sleeping through the night typically benefits from just really starting earlier. And then overnight when she comes in, generally we look to divert her back.
Okay.
And again, often parents say, well, I've done that, but she keeps following me out. But what you do is you go back and you stay with her in her room. So rather than getting into bed with her, I might put you beside her, you know, on a beanbag or a cushion.
Okay.
And I would really support her.
And that's a commitment from the parents as well.
It's a huge commitment. And again, with this particular age group, unfortunately, it might take you 4 weeks. Now, the first week to 10 days would be where you'd probably be the most sleep deprived.
Okay.
But then if you're thinking about long term, she'd be sleeping consistently in her own bed and uninterrupted, which becomes very important in terms of health and development.
Of course it does, yeah. Jumping to a much younger, I have a 9-month-old who wakes constantly during the night and he just won't self-soothe, and I've rocked him and feed him to sleep. This was me when Joan was little.
Sure.
She was very dependent on me, and maybe that was a mistake that I made. But he, could you get any tips to get the little one sleeping better?
Certainly. And again, I feel, I don't ever really feel there are mistakes.
Right.
I really believe that. I just feel as parents...
You're so supportive, Lucy. I love it.
Well, I love to think that I am, but I really do, I think that as parents, we put ourselves down so much.
Yeah.
And we compare ourselves, and I just think that we undermine what we're doing. The thing here, when you have difficulties, is that maybe you could do something slightly differently that would work for your child a little bit better.
Okay.
So when you have a child who's maybe, as I call them, parent dependent,
yes,
and that's a massive umbrella term. That could be nursing to sleep, bottling to sleep, rocking, rolling, laying with to get them to go to sleep. Unfortunately, when you have that dynamic, you're always going to be a little bit more vulnerable to nighttime activity.
Okay.
So when we work on sleep, we generally try to get the right biological time structure by day.
Okay.
Because it's a holistic
and
approach.
And actually, you're touching on a question from Michelle about daytime sleep.
Perfect. So again, most children have a biological rhythm that's quite similar. And again, at 9 months, so even 8 to 12 months or 8 to 15 months, most children will need 2 naps a day. And again, it's where those naps are positioned actually determine how well your child will sleep.
So ideally, where should they be during the day?
So ideally, I mean, a rested child would maybe need a nap around 9:30 and another nap around 1:30.
Okay.
The key thing is, when you start off with an under-rested child, you sometimes need to start off with a nap at 8 o'clock and a nap at 12 o'clock.
Okay.
And maybe even an earlier bedtime. I'm very much focused on dynamics between sleep.
Okay.
And what I really want is not more than 4 hours between the final nap and bedtime for this particular age range.
Right.
So that might mean having a nap as late as 3, 3:30 and starting a bedtime process at around 6:30 in order to be asleep maybe for 7:30. And I think that if you can get what I call call a feeding and sleeping balance to the day, then I feel you can start looking at the dependency issue. And again, I always encourage parents to use my stay and support approach if you are transitioning from any of the parent dependencies.
Okay.
And this way, you don't need to let your child cry it out. You don't need them to be left on
their
own.
Would you not be an advocate of that?
I couldn't do it.
I could never bring myself
again,
to do it.
And again, I suppose, again, each to their own.
Yeah.
But as a practitioner, that wouldn't be the road that I would ever go down with a family.
That's very reassuring, I'm sure, for everybody listening, actually.
Yeah, and I really feel that you don't need to let your child cry it out in order to get better sleep. There are really nice, gentle, child-centred ways of doing it.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say there won't be distress and upset on your child's part, but that it would be attended by the parent, stress levels are kept low, and we still achieve the same end result. It might take us a little bit longer, but I feel it's probably a more productive way of going forward.
Lucy, as always, we've run out of time,
and
there's so many questions coming in, but you've got your book that you're going to offer right now, so a lot of answers will be within that. And then you've got Sleep Through, which is relaxing rub and a body spray in sleep spray. So a pack all together.
Yes.
And the book's title is called
The Baby Sleep Solution.
And
it's
excellent.
From birth to 6 years of age.
And we'll have you on again. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
There's a fire starting in my heart.
Today FM's Weekend Breakfast with Alison Curtis.
And Cadbury. There's a glass and a half in everyone. So share kindness.
And thanks very much to Lucy Wolfe, sleep expert from sleepmatters.ie, for sticking around, because we had so many questions that came in on Weekend Breakfast, Lucy. So thank you very, very much. One that I thought you would be able to help the person with, Lorna, she said, thanks in advance. I have a 9-week-old baby who just fights sleep and is struggling to sleep independently and generally overtired in the heat, but generally overtired
sure.
all the time.
So for me, at 9 weeks old, I wouldn't worry a bit about independence.
Okay.
Yeah. I would just do whatever works. I would lean into the fact that your baby developmentally probably can't do this just yet and needs lots of assistance. So
yeah.
I would say swing them, sling them, roll them, bounce them, do
yeah.
whatever works. But you can absolutely start to overcome the overtiredness.
Okay. And
so,
would you be a big fan of the sling? Because that's what I did for a long time.
Yeah,
as well.
I feel that anything that is safely done
yeah.
that helps you get through those days,
yeah.
I'm a big advocate of. And I've worn my own children.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great way, especially when you then have more than one, like double buggy, someone on you and going somewhere. I
yeah.
think it's a great way. Plus as well, your baby comes
yeah.
wanting to be on you.
Yeah, of course.
And it's a natural
yeah.
Default setting, if you like. So it's one way of having both your hands free and being close and doing all of that with your baby. So don't be overwhelmed that your baby doesn't want to be put down.
Okay.
They don't come like that in the most part.
And 9 weeks is so young.
It's so young.
Little.
So again, I feel, again, parents put themselves under enormous pressure, and I don't want parents under pressure. There's enough to be worried about.
Yeah, of course.
What you can do, though, is try to overcome the overtiredness by first of all understanding that any symptoms you see that are obvious
right.
are already overtired.
Yeah.
So brief eye rubs, brief yawns, moments of quiet indicate sleep readiness.
Yeah, okay.
But your new baby will probably do those symptoms after about 45 minutes and maybe not more than an hour and a half of actually being awake.
Okay.
And again, very often you're feeding your baby for those first 40
yeah,
minutes.
Of course, yeah.
And again, they need to go sleep again. So again, trying to overcome that, I would recommend a wake time no later than 7:30 a.m. Even if you've been up loads throughout the course of the night, just get up, expose your baby to bright light and anchor your day with a feed.
Okay.
Even if you only just fed at 6 a.m. and make that your morning feed, and the first wake period is tiny, so it's going to absolutely be nothing more than an hour and 15, an hour and 30.
Right.
And again, if you can wrap your baby up and hold them and get them to go to sleep, I think if you can get that first wake period right, then the rest of the day will run a little bit more smoothly and you can start to run a few numbers, if you like.
And it's funny, Lucy, just hearing you speak about that, like I'm years away from it now, Joan 7, but it is kind of nuts, and I never thought to talk to anybody about a baby sleep when I was pregnant. Like I never, it's
nobody
so
ever really does. And I
you do it after the fact
yeah.
when you're too tired.
Absolutely. Loads of focus on, let's say, the antenatal care
yeah.
and your birth plan. And I could stand somewhere and be ignored by people with bumps
yeah.
only 6 months later for them to queue around the street to come and talk with me.
It's kind of nuts,
and
actually,
I suppose
when I think about
it. What I would love to see is an early intervention.
Absolutely.
Because information, education are key. If you knew now what you knew, you know,
of
that
course.
Kind of way.
Like I fell asleep for the first time in my life with my eyes open.
Yeah,
the first
absolutely,
of
right?
Life.
And I suppose you do feel that they're just going to sleep.
Yeah.
We're not going to have a sleep problem. We're not going to be one of those parents. And I suppose absolutely no one sets out to have a sleep challenge.
I know.
And the other thing is, it can occur at any time.
Of course.
So you could get your perfect baby to begin with,
yeah,
who is happy to be put down, no issues, and the wheels could fall off at 9 months.
Of course. This one's actually tied in with breastfeeding, and I found this a problem as well. It's actually not all my questions, by the way. These are actual ones coming in. But that the baby associates that with sleeping. So it is very hard to keep them awake once you start feeding them, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose any association, whether it's a breast association or a bottle association, holding, rocking, rolling, at some point, if you start to feel that that association is undermining your child's ability to stay asleep.
Okay.
So the common dynamic, and again, I would not want to even have this conversation until your baby's at least 6 months of age.
Right.
So if you're feeding and you're rocking and you're rolling, continue to do so.
Right.
And even if it's really challenging, I really don't feel it's developmentally appropriate to have any massive intervention.
Okay.
You could certainly work on feeding and sleeping balances, but I would never look at any intervention per se.
Right.
So I'd want your baby to be at least 6 months plus. And then if you've come to the stage where you feel it's not tenable, so very often a breastfeeding mum might report that they're feeding their baby to go to sleep and they're waking every 40 minutes.
Joan was like that.
Yeah, right. Looking to be reattached to the breast. And again, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but that can be very difficult to deal with in real life, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
And even if you're sharing the bed with your baby, very often they still are unsettled. And what happens is then the parents start to feel like maybe the breastfeeding is the problem and then they want to give up.
Mm.
And look, I'm a breastfeeding parent myself, and so I really encourage mums, look, we want to keep your breastfeeding,
mm-hmm,
but maybe we can look at an uncoupling where maybe breastfeeding and sleep are not interrelated.
Right.
The first piece I work on is bedtime.
Yeah.
So again, I try to maybe reposition the final feed. So I like to create what I call dramatic distance, where we look at maybe having the final feed an hour before bedtime.
Okay.
And again, I might say do it downstairs, lights on, day closed, nothing to do with sleep.
Right.
And then I would look to maybe then introducing your bedtime routine that we spoke about earlier. And then I might use my stay and support approach to try to help your baby transition. It's worth mentioning that if you are a breastfeeding unit and you're looking to make some transitions, it's very often helpful if the other parent does the beginning part of the changes.
Okay.
Because obviously the breastfeeding mom and baby have a very sympathetic relationship and they have history.
Yeah. And the baby goes, wait a minute.
Yeah, and it can often be more stressful for the breastfed baby if, and again, some parents will not have the option of another parent, but maybe another, like a grandparent, sometimes just someone just to do maybe
to
the first
that.
Bedtime. The first two bedtimes is all I ever do. And then I get the mom then to do the next two bedtimes.
Right, okay.
And I start to interchange it then.
Okay.
And again, if you ever feel that, you know, your baby is more upset than you would like them to be, then maybe assess and see what's causing those difficulties.
Okay. And the other one, the final one we'll go with is, and it's come in a few times actually, multiple births and twins.
Yes.
And that one, and you said it's a very common dynamic that one of the twins, set of twins will sleep very well and one won't. So advice on that, because that came in a few times.
Yeah,
actually.
And it is very common. And I know that you're a twin yourself.
I slept.
You're the sleeper. I see this dynamic a lot. And my reasoning would be that one child is more sensitive to their internal body clock than the other.
Oh.
And so what we normally need to do is observe a tighter timing structure for the troublesome truck.
Yeah.
Okay. And then drag the other twin along with them, because the twin that sleeps well is what I would call an adjustable child.
Okay.
So they'll sleep on whatever time structure you put it on, but the child that's not sleeping well won't tolerate anything except being really in sync with their natural biological rhythm.
Okay.
So again, I look at re-establishing that. And again, they're age appropriate and age relevant feeding and sleeping balances that are very much in line with most children. Most children are not too far outside of the box.
Okay.
So I would normally get the parent to start working along that, on that basis.
So to let one kind of, in a way, be the leader of the
clock.
Then
exactly. And then very often, the twin who has been the poorer sleeper turns into the better sleeper of the two.
That's
of
funny.
The two. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I always look at things.
I feel like the age that we're at, my sister does sleep all the time now.
Right? Yeah. But again, I always think it's very important that if you have twins and you're open to it, I love that they're kept together.
Right.
And I love that they're kept where they can see and hear each other
in a
parallel dynamic. So even just in my practice, I've often seen an improvement when I've taken an L-shape bed and put them parallel to each other.
Very good.
I know. So again, I really feel we have to be very sensitive to the twin.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah,
the
yeah.
multiple yeah. Phenomenon, if you like.
Well, again, it's sleepmatters.ie. And Lucy Wolf, thank you so much for your extra time this morning. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Today FM's Weekend Breakfast with Alison Curtis
and Cadbury. There's a glass and a half in everyone, so share kindness.